Ok, gjør klar på tre.
Det
hender i de dager.
Det hendte i de dager.
Det hendte i de dager.
Takk. Fra toppen, folkens.
Podcast for estetiske læringsprosesser.
Yes, we are here today at the Forest podcast studio with Dr. George Rodostinus. He is an associate professor in theater directing at the School of Performance and Cultural Industries of the University of Leeds. And he had just held a lecture in body in performance. Very exciting. And today we are going to talk about aesthetic learning processes, something that we in the Forest Research Group have as a main focus. So we were just discussing aesthetic learning processes, and you suggested that maybe it could be called immersive processes as well. Our research group focuses on that in working with young adults and children, and emphasized the importance of involving participants practically and emotionally in the process of creating, and through that learning something new about themselves, about a theme they are researching, about the world, as well as facts and other kind of sort of knowledge. And what I was thinking, preparing for the this part, talking to you, is in a way producing a theater piece, or not in a way, actually it is a learning learning through aesthetic process or aesthetic learning process, because especially when you work with composed theater as you do, you have to participate in a co-creative process, and it is collective, so you do it together with other performers. And in that, you participate by putting yourself in the game, so to say, and produce new knowledge through that, I think. And I was thinking, especially with composed theatre, using musicalization as a compositional tool. But before we talk about that, the immersive theatre, why did you think about that?
Because when we mentioned about younger audiences, mm-hmm. and the fact that I think that they're very curious, the fact that they're allowed to go in a space where they can go and explore, investigate, be immersed, they can go and open a drawer, mm-hmm. they can go and take something which is not there, not to be taken away. So in a way, when it gives them that playful environment, is what they're used to. And when it's that, in a way, not exaggerated, but when it's that magnified with the use of fantastic scenography and lighting and other sensory materials, we could think of, you know, the sounds, we could think of haze or other theatrical apparatus. I have a feeling that that would become, in a way, for them something memorable, because they would feel as if they're part of a film set, and they would feel that in the theatre usually there is rules, and the rule is you just sit there and watch, and they would break those rules and be allowed to be playful, creative, and allow that curiosity to be satisfied.
Yeah, so maybe not aesthetic learning processes, but immersive learning processes.
Immersive, and also you mentioned earlier participatory, which is again crucial for them, to allow them the opportunity to change the flow of a show, or to be asked questions, or to become the focus of a show. And of course, we all know the power and the healing power of drama therapy, and how that drama can be used to give voice to younger audiences. And I think the tradition has been to use theatre to explore issues of bullying or issues which have traumatic aspects, what we could do is just use this aesthetic learning to explore issues which are not difficult for us, but what makes you laugh, what excites you, what do you want to become in the future, something which is not always linked to something which is troubling us, but something which excites us or something which is entertaining for us.
Yeah. You mentioned to me that your students conduct workshops in connection with your class. Do you have any examples of what they do, maybe?
Yes. Depending on the nature of the show, we always invite children from the schools of Leeds to come and watch performances that we create. We either do a special matinee for them or we do parts of the show for them. But 2-3 years ago, together with the students and my colleague, we created a new musical called Electrified, about the first use of electricity in the household in the UK. So you can imagine the excitement of using a professor from Leeds, Professor Graham Goody's book on electrifying the household, and taking that and creating a new musical about it. And then we showed scenes to students where after that there was a workshop on physics, believe it or not, and things that I have to say that I was learning at the same time as they did. But at that occasion, that was very useful for them in relation to that.
Taking that into a workshop with the children and young adults, that is for sure an aesthetic learning process. Learning about physics through aesthetics, through immersive process. So yes, that's very exciting. I would love to be part of that.
You should come to Leeds and take part.
Yeah, I think so. We should visit.
We love immersive theatre in Leeds. And another trend that we've got is verbatim theatre. So using word for word material from either interviews or people's testimonies and creating a performance to that. So we could either do microphone exercises, where, for example, I record you and I play it back in my ear and I try to speak exactly like you, but then also add a physicality to that voice. And the children are very excited with this exercise, but it also just reminds us about what makes theatre. Where is the link between the real and the performed?
Thinking about the example of children trying to mimic your voice and as well the body expression, that is the core of aesthetic learning processes, because you the thing about learning how others think and how their world is connected, and doing that through arts and together in many ways is what, for me anyway, at this stage is aesthetic learning process. Aesthetic learning processes making theatre are ensemble based. And you work in a special way with ensembles, creating together through the composed theatre, not genre as you said, but tool or method. In that way, I was thinking that performers that have not worked with that form of or method of creating, for them it is a learning process as well, participating in a production that you direct. You think I'm on the track here?
Yes.
A way?
This is very, very interesting, this what you raise, because, for example, in the auditions for a project like that, the first thing that you need to check is whether that performer can improvise. And if in case they cannot improvise, then you're putting them in a very difficult situation to be part of this ensemble, where improvisation is a very important tool in generating the material. For example, you could find an amazing pianist who can play any piece of classical music you want, that there is a score for it. And you could say, could you please improvise some jazz for me or something else? And they're going to say, no, I'm really sorry. If there is a score, I can perform it amazingly well, but I cannot improvise. I think it's the same with an actor. And you need to be able to find people who have that skill, Of course, in an educational environment, what we do is allow that skill to be developed. So we help them develop their improvisational skills, which these days are crucial because if we think about it, these days the actor is never just an actor. When they go into a company, they might need to write their own material, choreograph their own material, perhaps help with the lighting. Mm-hmm. If it's a small theatre company, then they need to do more things than just act. And it's what we do with our students. We try to make them all-rounders, to give them a lot of skills, whether it's in design, in writing, in editing, in dramaturging, in being able to offer much more than just their performance skills. So improvisation is crucial when you're part of this ensemble, and also the ability to work freely and not think that your contribution is precious, because it might be reordered, it might be edited, it might be given to somebody else, or it might be cut. And it's not a reflection on you. It's whether it has a place in the final show. And I've got one colleague who joked the other day very beautifully and said, oh, that's really wonderful, but perhaps this should remain in the rehearsal room. And I found that a rather cheeky, but a wonderful way just to say some things are very useful, but we should leave them in the rehearsal room, because they've done what they needed to do to help us go from A to B, but now we need to just focus on what's actually going to make the core of the piece.
At one point, it was not something that you have done for many years, but something you have developed. And there's a learning process in that, I think, with you, for you and for your ensemble. Could you talk about that?
Of course. It was a huge learning curve for me, because all of my studies have been in music. My first degree is in music composition, my master's is in composing music for film, TV and theatre, and my PhD was in music theatre, but in the School of Music. So the way they started was what I call conducting the body. So the way that a conductor conducts the musicians to create sound and emotion and a performance, I applied that on working with my actor performers. So I would, in a way, conduct them live, perhaps during an improvisation or during a run of a show, by encouraging them to think about their pace, their rhythm, mostly about their pauses. So it's just encouraging them to absorb the pause and allow the silence to just be a bit longer than what they thought, because in a way, that's what sometimes they forget about, that the pause and the silence is so important. So the way I started, I think, is by conducting the body. And then slowly, I developed other techniques as well. And of course, now I have the luxury, when I work on a new project, to bring a couple of collaborators back. And in a way, it's a very welcoming environment, but it's all about trust. It's about a performer walking into a rehearsal room and just say, I trust and respect this director, and then I would like to work collaboratively to co-create the next piece. I've got improvisational skills, I've got the confidence, and I've got the physical skills that are required. I feel very welcome and I feel safe, so I will be able to respond to this. I'm not going to lie that on a couple of occasions, the first day is a bit awkward. That's why that first day is crucial. You need to make everybody feel very comfortable, very welcome, and it has to be playful. It has to be an exchange of energy, which is playful, but explosive. Yeah. And then after that, I think when that trust and respect, and they need to feel that confidence that you know what you're doing. You've got a directorial vision and you're going to all together find the ways to materialize it. And at that point is when you feel that that excellent communication and that dialogue is when it starts, and when they start giving and you just feel that energy exchange becoming the main strategy within the rehearsal room.
It is much similar to the processes I have been going through with children and later on young adults group, that I have been a director for 10 years. And, you know, developing a common language in rehearsal and on stage, it is really extremely giving and exciting. And I really connect to what you're saying and the work you do. So it's beautiful. I think we have to wrap up now. I think what you also mentioned in the lecture, being in the moment, that is a very, very powerful tool, both in process and on stage for everybody.
And a lot of recent directors which are doing fantastic work, like, for example, Thomas Ostermeier from Germany and Ivo van Hove, who works a lot in London these days, they believe that they don't believe in characterization, in about finding my character. They believe about responding to you right now. So the energy, the exchange from one individual to the other in that specific scene, within that specific context. And that changes the way we teach theatre, the way we view theatre, and the impact that that has on an audience is something which is immediate, fresh, and seems non-rehearsed, yeah, even though we all know that it is.
And that's exactly what we work with in the subject and the class I was talking about, and in the projects with the small children. The ability of being responsive and in the moment with children, taking the impulses from them and working with that, but still rehearsed for a while beforehand. And yes, with that, I think we should round up. And I will just like to say thank you very much for joining us. It was really a pleasure, and you are amazing to listen to. And I hope we will see you again sometimes.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful to be here and have this excellent conversation with yourself. Thank you. Podcast for Zedis Kilaris Kusensen.